This is Barbara Glickstein, and you're tuned into Health Cetera, brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy. I'm reporting from TEDMed, and I met a nurse colleague who I'm very happy to be interviewing this afternoon. Michelle Reisinger is a registered professional nurse. She's been an obstetrics nurse for 28 years and is a clinical nursing instructor teaching OB. She also loves the power of story. And so in our chats out in the sun, where we are at TEDMed, I decided I need to get her on the air to hear about the power of story and to share with you something that she has in mind for a major project she'll be doing in the future. Welcome to Health Cetera, Michelle.
Thank you, Barbara.
It's good to be in a community of healthcare providers. There are many, many physicians here, and as we both know, this last couple of days has brought together people from many fields, music and art and social sciences, people who are innovators in technology, and nurses. And here you are, you chose to come to TEDMed because in addition to your role as a professional nurse with a senior professional nurse in obstetrics, you love story.
I do, yeah.
Tell us about that.
So I just believe, you know, when I think about my professional work, I think about when I'm training new nurses or I'm training student nurses, and when we gather around the nurse's station, the power of story when we're trying to teach somebody or train somebody on a postpartum hemorrhage, what to do, on different things about how to labor a mother, how to assist her in labor. The power of story is something that genuinely comes up nurse to nurse, physician to nurse, and we share our stories, we share our experiences, and I just think it's a wonderful learning tool. And it's makes up who we are professionally. You know, all those stories come together and make us up, you know, how we practice.
So if you're teaching student nurses, which you do as a professor, as a clinical instructor, the stories that you tell, are they from your clinical experience in a way that students will not only understand the pathophysiology or the health and well-being of the mom, the new mom, and the newborn? Give us an example of a story you recently told to teach something to a student that really made them or helped them really understand what you were trying to drive as a point. Maybe it was a story about fears that women in labor have and, mm-hmm. and how you can calm them down. Mm-hmm. Or right after the baby's born, what the role of a new nurse might be mm-hmm. in supporting her either through labor or right after that baby comes into the world.
Mm-hmm. So in the last couple years, we have understood the value of skin-to-skin time. So when, in the past, when I first started in labor and delivery, the baby would be born, the cord would get clamped right away, dry the baby off, let the mother have a quick look at it, and we went right to the warmer to do the 1 minute Apgar score and the 5 minute Apgar score. And over the last couple years, we've decided, you know, if the baby is vigorous and crying and, you know, becoming pink and beautiful, leave that baby right on its mom's chest. There's that skin-to-skin touch. There's that, of course, bonding time. All those hours of hard work, that's the prize. You know, they've finally come to their prize. But also, physiologically, we look at, you know, this flush of heat that radiates from a mom's core that warms her baby better than any baby, you know, infant warmer. So stories like that, you can incorporate, you know, the what they're learning in the classroom in theory and put that together with what they're seeing clinically. But I try to take that another step when we do post-conference, and I have them tell their classmates' stories so that they will, you know, they'll have different things during the day. I had a student a few semesters back that was in the NICU for her rotation that day,
In the NICU, in being the
neonatal intensive care unit. And she was caring for a baby that was really not very sick or very premature, but its mother had had a postpartum hemorrhage and was currently in the intensive care unit, about to die. She had a very critically low hemoglobin and hematocrit and was refusing all blood products because of her religious background as being a Jehovah's Witness. And so it brought, she shared this story with us, working with the baby and hearing the nurse's take on what the mother's choice was. And so it brought us into a lot of great discussions about ethics and decisions and whether you could support that kind of thing or what, you know, and what it, just what they thought about it. So it's fun to have them then share those stories, and they learn so much from each other, more than they, I think more sometimes than they can learn from me.
Only with a good facilitator of those conversations, I think, to guide them and to point out, as in a learning environment, especially in a safe learning environment, right, when those biases are expressed without shaming anyone, but I'm sure when, particularly in the complexity of an ethics discussion, mm-hmm, we all have both our known biases and sometimes biases that we're not as aware of as clinicians and as nurses, that we need to be sure that our own values and our own core beliefs are not interfering with the care that we provide to others who have different belief systems. I'm sure in the case that you just mentioned, those who practice and live as Jehovah's Witness, it's a complex conversation for young nursing students to understand.
Right, right. But I like what you said about feeling safe, is that I think that we've had different varieties of professors in nursing academia where, you know, intimidation really has no place. If they're afraid of interacting and asking questions of their instructor in the clinical setting, it's not safe for them, and they're not going to ask because they're afraid to ask, or, you know, it's not going to create a good environment for them. So I really try to, and with my new nurses that I'm training as preceptor at work, where I work, I want them to ask me. I tell them, ask me anything. You can ask, I don't care if you think it's stupid, you know. I would rather have you ask me 100 questions rather than think you know it all, because you don't, and I don't, and I've been doing this a long time. So
Your interest in stories and storytelling is something that is why you're also here at TEDMED. Mm-hmm. What has some of the impact of the stories that you've heard had on you through the lens of being a nurse, mm-hmm, in terms of its relatedness, in terms of its newness? Any moment that you've been here over the last couple of days, has there been a shift in a thought or an opening of a new idea for you as a result of the exposure of the varied fields of people who are here discussing health and the future of role of innovation, mm-hmm, in health?
Mm-hmm. Well, today we had a speaker, Allie Crum, who I was lucky to sit next to at lunch yesterday. She comes from Stanford University. I believe her background is in clinical psychology. But she did a talk about the placebo effect and how if the caregiver walks into a room to be with a patient and presents themselves as, help me out here, there were two different. Competence and warmth. And so for the caregiver that went in and portrayed, you know, that extreme competence and warmth with things like a tidy office and a crisp lab jacket, the patient had a much better experience, obviously, than for the caregiver that came in kind of sloppy and staring at the computer screen, not warm, and said, oops. So an interesting discussion I had the previous day with a senior resident in OB, kind of also was on the same theme. He was talking about training medical students and junior residents about kind of watching them in their bedside interactions with patients. And to paraphrase what he said to me, he said, I'm so grateful for the nurses because I try to show them, you know, watch how the nurses are interacting. And I've never had a physician say that to me. I've never had anybody share that perspective with me on what their view of is, you know, is of the nurse-patient relationship. And so that's who I strive to be and to be genuine in that interaction with feeling confident and feeling, you know, and portraying warmth to my patients. So I hope my students can see that too. I try to, you know, mentor them display that, you know, for them. So model that. Thank
model
you.
That. Yeah, yeah, it's sort of show me, don't just tell me. And
right.
I think that when we all learn to see someone be impactful, to create that safe environment again, with the family you're serving, the new parent, the family who comes into the space to support and be there to celebrate on sometimes not good outcomes,
mm-hmm.
like the reference to the mother who had a postpartum hemorrhage
mm-hmm.
and was dying, that all of the people who come to be part of that healthcare encounter demand that we notice and observe things about them and how they're interacting and how we can support that.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are critical times in people's lives. We all feel very vulnerable. Even in the positive outcomes of healthy babies being
mm-hmm.
born, there's a vulnerability in the space of taking care and being taken care of. And I think we need to, I'm so glad I enjoyed her talk also about
mm-hmm.
elevating and having the research
right.
To show that there was a considerable difference in the placebo effect of this cream that was being placed on a histamine response skin test that actually shows that those components of the placebo effect and the ability of the mind to respond to that and other components of who each individual is creates better outcomes.
Yeah, it was really pretty cool.
So you've told me a little bit about this project that you hope in the future to produce about Lullaby. Tell us about the Lullaby stories.
So in my career, I, you know, have taken care of so many different kinds of people with many different backgrounds, many different cultures and ethnicities. And when I ask them often to sing me a lullaby in their native language. And sometimes I will ask the grandmother, their mother who's there, or the mother-in-law, to sing me a lullaby. And it's something that I think as a, you know, somebody who loves the power of story, it kind of puts in focus how something so common to being a new mother and singing to your baby is so universal and beautiful. And then the fun part is to then have them tell me in English what the words mean. And so I've had fun learning about different work with a Ukrainian nurse, and she sang me this beautiful, I can't remember if it was Ukrainian or Russian lullaby. And it was just gorgeous. And I said, now tell me what that means. And it was something about, you know, be careful about the wolf coming to get you. And so so there's more story there, you know. But I just celebrate what my different patients and what, you know, what they teach me, what they give back to me. In those kinds of interactions, and it's a lovely icebreaker and a way to get to know each other a little bit.
It's also a therapeutic interaction.
Yeah.
You're asking them is the beginning of them. Maybe they didn't need the recommendation or the reminder, but early on,
yeah.
our communication with newborns, with our newborn babies, with our newborn grandchildren, our nephews, nieces, neighbors, children that we have the opportunity to be with, that singing to them mm-hmm. is a very powerful, mm-hmm. Beautiful communication.
Right.
It's why we lullaby people to sleep. And it's interesting, in our own, in, you know, I was thinking of the lullabies that I've sung to my children and that was sung to me, you know, rock-a-bye baby on the treetop, when the wind blows, the cradle shall rock, when the wind, you know, the bee down will fall, baby, cradle and all. And, you know, when you think about it, wow, that's a bit of a little scary story.
Right,
but
right.
We also know that children, it is the content of the words, and I know that people have stopped singing that song, perhaps, but maybe not.
No, I don't think so.
No, you don't think so.
No.
Yeah, I think we were saying earlier that children sometimes, although, you know, infants may not know the words, but even when toddlers and 3 and 5 and 7 year olds say, please sing me that song, there's an element of it being a little scary, but also it being a little reassuring.
Yeah.
And it becomes a pattern of, tell me that one more time. You were sharing a song that your children love.
Oh, my ex-mother-in-law used to sing to my children, and they would say to her, oh, Grandma, sing babies, sing babies, sing babies. And so she, in her lovely Arkansas accent, would sing, oh, do you remember a long time ago when two little babies, their names I don't know, went walking along a bright summer day, got lost in the woods, I heard them say. The sky grew dark, the stars gave no light, and the two little babies, they laid down and died. And when they were dead, the robin so red brought strawberry leaves and over them spread.
Thank you for singing.
Oh, you're welcome. But I just never understood, like, what is going on here? Yeah.
But they always asked her to sing
they
it.
Loved
they
it.
Loved
they
it.
They loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we have heard some also incredible stories here at TEDMET about music and about pacing of music and what music does for the brain and the emotions and the mind and how the personal choice of music, my personal choice, may be quite different than yours.
Right.
And some of the research mentioned today by one of the presenters was the studies that showed when one listened to their favorite choice or one of their favorite choices of music and then was offered another subject song,
right.
Their response was totally different.
Right, right.
And so that
so
we
make
should
your
trust.
Own playlist.
We should get your own playlist, exactly.
Yeah, interesting background with my son. I have a 21-year-old son who's a music performance major. He plays the bassoon. And he was a, when he was born, shortly after he was born, he developed bacterial meningitis and was very, very sick, almost died, and spent 21 days in the intensive care unit with a brain injury, you know, very, very sick. And I sang to him constantly. I rocked him and nursed him and sang to him constantly because he was very irritable and fussy after going through all this, you know, health issues. And he had a lot of issues as a toddler and as a young grade school kid with, you know, hyperactivity and those kinds of things and very quickly frustrated and would have lots of temper tantrums. And so music was a very calming thing. And so in, I think, about third grade, he started playing an instrument. And for him, I think it was like a piece of his brain that spoke a language that none of us in the family, we've all done some music, and his dad is a wonderful musician as well. But he speaks a completely different language. He can, you know, we were in a store a few weeks ago, and we played a wind chime. It was like a home and garden type store. And he could name the notes that he heard in that wind chime just by listening, because he said, I just, kind of like what we heard in one of our TED Talks, he said, I just see it. I know the notes. I know what they are. And he was exactly right. So so music is really, it's just a pretty incredible thing.
Do you sing to the families you care for?
think that I have not much. For a few years, I worked in outpatient surgery, and I once had a patient that was there for a blood transfusion. He was undergoing treatment for leukemia, and he was a pretty young guy. I would say he was like 35 or so, and he had brought his guitar, and so I had clocked out. It was the end of my shift, and I just went to say, you know, I'm checking out, and I'm going to leave you in good hands here with the next nurse that's going to follow me. And he had his guitar on his lap, and I said, oh, I play a little bit. And he's like, well, let's play. And I was done, you know, done with work. I had to get home, and I took that time to just sit and play guitar with him, the two of us together, and just little stuff, you know, little kinds of riffs and stuff. But I'm so glad I did. I'm so glad I had that, you know, made that moment with him. And I think it was good for him, but it was way better for mm-hmm. me, you know. Really cool.
You also like to write.
Mm-hmm.
And so in writing the stories, or perhaps creating stories, I'm wondering what you want to write about, or what you are writing about.
Yeah. Well, I recently submitted something for a poetry contest. I wrote a poem one day after I was working as a director in an OB department, and we were doing a big remodel. Our department had kind of like rose pink walls and ugly, you know, hospital gray, and so we gave it a little facelift. And the guys were there laying down new flooring, and so they were there for about maybe 2 weeks, doing the different patient rooms one by one, and then the common hallway. And during this time, we had a mom that was delivering unmedicated, and so she was getting close to the time where she was about to give birth, and was becoming quite vocal, and I was watching these guys laying this floor and thinking, like, this is a completely, you know, unknown environment for them. And so I went home and wrote a song about a poem called Birth Song, and it kind of just talked about listening to her. It's part mantra, you know, part pain, part She's singing out in this, I can't remember exactly the words, but then I say, and then wait for the fermata, wait for that pause, and then listen for the moment where her child first sings out. Because you would hear her, you know, her, you know, doing her sounds, her vocalization as this baby was, you know, crowning and about to be born. And then there's always this pause, this silence, and then all of us, you know, that'll be at the nurse's station, we then will hear the, wah! You know, the baby crying, and oh, wonderful, she's done, you know. And so I wrote this poem called Birth Song.
I want to thank Michelle Reisinger, who is an OB nurse. She's been an OB nurse for 28 years. She's also a clinical nursing instructor and is a storyteller. And now we also know you are a poet. The world that you bring to your nursing really is reflected in the stories that you shared with us today. And I want to thank you for joining me, Barbara Glickstein, on Health Cetera.
Thank you, Barbara.